You are tuned in to WPVM FM 103.7, Asheville, North Carolina, and streaming at WPVMFM.org.
This is WPVM 103.7 in Asheville, North Carolina. Hello and welcome to A Better World on WPVM. My name is McNair Ezard and I'm your host for today's show. We come to you every week at 103.7 on your FM dial, or you can stream us at WPVMFM.org. Each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations who are working to create a world that works for everyone. Let's meet our guest for today. Today we have with us, from Germany, Elisa Graf. She's an American writer, translator, and podcaster living in Germany since 2010. She wrote about her experiences with refugees in a piece for Share International magazine called What Sharing Makes Possible. And today we are going to be talking about refugees. Elisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's a delight to be here.
Appreciate you taking the time to be with us today. I'd like to start out by talking about the overall refugee situation. We're hearing a lot in the news these days about these refugees. And can you give our listeners, just a definition of a refugee?
Yes. Well, actually, if you go to the International Rescue Committee's website, they have a really nice way to understand the difference between refugees, migrants, and asylum seekers. Because there's a bit of a difference. A refugee is someone who's been forced to flee his or her home because of war, violence, or persecution, often without warning. They are unable to return home unless and until conditions in their native lands are safe for them again. So, usually it also explains that an official entity such as a government or the UN refugee agency determines whether a person seeking international protection meets the definition of a refugee based on well-founded fear. And those who obtain refugee status are given protection under international laws and conventions and life-saving support from aid agencies, including the International Rescue Committee. There's also quite a large number of people migrating other places. So I guess we should get into the difference of what is considered a migrant. A migrant is someone who's moving from place to place within his or her country or across borders, usually for economic reasons, such as seasonal work. Similar to immigrants, they weren't forced to leave their native countries because of persecution or violence most of the time, but rather are seeking better opportunities. I think that sometimes these definitions get to be a little muddy because obviously, we know of circumstances in some countries where it's hard to say that the economic conditions, for example, in Venezuela are so bad. People don't have a lot of protections. And there's actually a very large migration taking place outside of Venezuela at this time, too, and other countries in South America. So it's hard to say that they're just looking for work. Their situation has become untenable in those countries in some cases. So you could say, in a way, that it's a difficult definition.
Oftentimes we tend to think of people that become refugees because they are fleeing war-torn areas, and in the world today we're looking at more than just refugees of war, right? You just mentioned Venezuela.
Right. There are people that are fleeing conditions that have just become impossible in their own countries. The economic conditions are so bad and they don't actually even have the protections in a normal civil society in those countries. People just have no choice in some cases because there are gangs that have overrun the areas. And so it's kind of a hard thing to say is, why is somebody actually leaving in some cases? Some cases it's obvious, right? War is obvious in places like the Ukraine at the moment or in Syria, which a huge number of people were displaced as a result of the Syrian war. And it's something like 65 million people have been displaced since that began.
I think that a lot of the folks that are seeking to come to the United States from Central America are leaving because of violence, gang violence, drug violence, that sort of thing.
Right. A lot of people want it.
Are there any estimates on how many refugees there are in the world today, 2023?
Yes, if you go to the UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR's website, they have some data that's available that's very current. So at the moment, actually, the one that I'm looking at right now was updated at the, in 2022 in October. 103 million people have been forcibly displaced worldwide. So that's actually, I think that mark was a huge landmark. It was like a major milestone, because up till now, I don't think there's ever been more than 100 million people displaced in any time in world history. So it's a terrible crisis we're facing right now. There's also, among those, there's 53.2 million people internally displaced, 32.5 million refugees, 4.9 million asylum seekers, and 5.3 million other people in need of international protection. There's about five countries that are actually hosting most refugees. Turkey hosts the largest number of refugees, with 3.7 million people living in refugee conditions, refugee camps, very large sprawling camps. This is another terrible tragedy that they had this great earthquake just a few months ago, and huge number of people that were affected were refugees. Another country that has a large number of refugees, one of the largest numbers, 2.5 million people are in Colombia. They also related to the crisis in Venezuela.
Well, it's interesting because many of the countries that end up hosting these refugees can ill afford to do so. Countries that don't have necessarily the economic resources or the infrastructure to do so, yet they continue to take refugees, like you said, Turkey and Colombia, I think Pakistan and Uganda are a couple of more. Isn't Germany one of the top yes. ones that takes refugees, but they don't necessarily have the economic problems that these other countries have? Why is there this discrepancy between with the poorer countries being the ones that take the refugees and not the richer countries?
That's a really good question. I don't think I can answer that question other than to say that actually I think it has to do with their proximity to whatever is going on. So, for example, Turkey is right on the edge of Syria. And as I've already mentioned, 65 million people were displaced by that war. And Turkey has a border with Syria, and of course, there are refugee camps inside Syria as well as inside Turkey, on both sort of straddling the line there. But that's true of so many places in the Middle East, for example. There are a lot of Palestinian refugees also, and Syrian refugees also in places like Jordan and Lebanon. So I think it has to do a lot with the countries that are bordering where these crises are happening. So that's one of the main themes, I suppose. And I guess because they're already places that are set up, they attract, of course, the UN has these camps that are set up and people know they can get help there. But I don't actually know the real reason why.
You know, before the show, I was doing some research about which countries are generating the largest number of refugees. And I'll just mention some of those. Syria, I think 6.8 million. Venezuela, you had mentioned earlier, 5.6 million. Ukraine, which is no surprise because of the war, 5.4 million, and Afghanistan, South Sudan, and so on. And those places are because of war, but Venezuela, I believe you mentioned earlier, is more because of economic reasons that so many people are leaving Venezuela.
As far as I know, things have been pretty bad in Venezuela now for a number of years, and it's a major crisis. 6.1 million refugees and migrants have left Venezuela as a result of political turmoil and socioeconomic instability. So 17 countries are hosting 80% of Venezuelans, more than 5 million people. So it's the largest external displacement crisis in Latin America's recent history. And it's just crazy. People are fleeing on foot, of course. They don't know where they're going. They have to leave behind their families, their communities. And many leave without documents to cross borders. So there's a lot of really awful things taking mm-hmm. place. Places where, I mean, it seems so crazy to me that these are modern countries. I mean, yes, of course, they're not as wealthy as many countries in the West, but they're not that far away. And it seems crazy to me that there would be so little that we can do to restabilize the situation, to make it possible and for people to stay where they are and to have. Because it wasn't that long ago, right, that Venezuela was actually doing okay because it's an oil-producing country.
Why is it important? I mean, when you mentioned that it seems like so little we can do to help stabilize certain situations, but it's still important for us to know about this. But why is it important for those of us who are not refugees to care about the refugee situation and those people who are refugees?
I think this is really the crux of the issue, that it's hard for us in lots of Western countries to imagine that this could happen to us one. But then what happened in Ukraine recently was an indication that, you know, I mean, yes, of course, it's on the border with Russia. They've had border disputes in the past, but I don't think anybody expected there to be a full-blown war happening in the middle of Europe again. And I think a lot of people were really shocked that they would have to suddenly leave their homes and flee as quickly as possible. And so it's hard for, I think, any of us who have not lived through a situation like that to imagine what it must be like. But it could happen to any of us. The world has a lot of instability these days, and we have an influx of these kinds of problems are about to happen because of climate change. It's already been predicted by many that we will be facing larger numbers of people migrating because of climate issues. They can't grow food in their own countries because it's too hot. So farming issues, other economic problems. I mean, we just saw with also the pandemic, supply chain issues and things like this have actually shut down whole industries. It's caused economic craziness all over the world. And so it's made life much harder. These crises make life much harder for people that are already struggling. So I think we have to be prepared that that the world is still not in a very stable situation, and it could happen to any of us. So we have to think about how we would like to be treated, you know, whether you're looking at the golden rule or you're looking at what Jesus said in the Bible, you know, what thou doest to the least of me, thou doest for me. Isn't that what he said? Something like that.
Close.
I have the quote exactly right. But So I've been concerned about this problem for a long time. I've actually had a great interest in these issues. When I grew up in California, and I don't know if people realize, but California has a huge economy. It's one of the largest in the world. I think it's the fourth largest in the world. Mm-hmm. It actually competes, you know, in terms of numbers with Germany, with other countries. It's got an economy that's bigger than many other countries, Western countries. And 75% of the people working in agriculture, which is one of the main industries there, are illegal immigrants. So I grew up in a place where a lot of people were undocumented and trying to make their livelihoods and trying to make life happen. You have a whole industry like agriculture in California, which is driving the economy, which is dependent on illegal labor. It was very present for me that there were people living in this place that weren't really part of the culture that I lived in, you know? And I think we need to recognize that we are interdependent on this planet, all of us. And we need to be aware that, you know, our neighbors, whether they come from Central America and are working in the fields, or whether they are people that we went to school with, or we all have something in common with each other. Our common humanity needs to be recognized by each of us, and we need to have more compassion. So I was very lucky to be living in Germany in 2015 when the German government decided to famously open doors to refugees fleeing from the war in Syria. And this is another reason why Germany has such a large number of refugees now. We have 2.2 million, according to the UN Refugee Agency. And it's bigger than any other country in Europe. Nobody had ever decided to do such a thing. So it was a major thing that took place. And it was really a privilege to be here to see what happened, because as soon as it was announced, all these little towns, Germany's made up of a lot of little towns. They're big cities, but there's mostly, everybody lives in a small village. And in every village, there was a meeting by the mayor with the people that were interested in participating and helping with these refugees. And in our case, the county seat, the county people working with refugees at the county level came and gave a little presentation and explained to regular Germans living in little towns, we can't do this without your help. We need to have people who are going to participate in teaching these people German and helping them wade through paperwork and helping them find housing and getting their kids into schools. and, you know, so many things. So I went to this meeting in my town, and there were about 80 people there. And I live in a town of about 3,000 to 5,000 people, depending on where you draw the boundary. So not a very big town. And then over the next few months, we got an influx, I think, of about 100, 120 refugees that came to live in our town. And I was really impressed with how the regular German population handled this.
You're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM, and we're streaming live at WPVMFM.org. And our guest today is Elisa Graf. She's an American writer, translator, and podcaster living in Germany since 2010. Okay, that's Joe Satriani playing Cryin'. That's from his The Extremist album. And today we are talking to Elisa Graf. We are talking about refugees in Germany and other places around the world. Elisa, before the break, you were talking about the German experience that basically started in 2015 when Angela Merkel opened the doors to, was it 1 million refugees? And you were talking about what happened in the various communities around the country. What was it like for you as an American living in Germany at that time?
Well, you know, as an American growing up in California in the Bay Area, San Francisco Bay Area, I was privileged to grow up also within a relatively integrated society with people from all over the world. It's a very east-west kind of place with multiple, you know, different generations of people from Asia and India and all over the world in the Bay Area. So it was a really nice mixed, intermixed populations. And when I came to live in Germany in a little town, there really wasn't a whole lot of diversity. And that was kind of a surprise to me in some ways. I don't know. I would just thought it's in the middle of Europe and I couldn't imagine it would be that much different. But I think the German people are very open people and they have 9 borders with other countries. But they also are, you know, still very German. That was kind of a big surprise to me living in a little town. I guess it's different than if you go to Berlin, of course, it's a very different kind of situation. But so I just want to read a quick quote from Ai Weiwei. He's a famous Chinese artist and activist. Uh-huh. And one of the things he said about refugees and the refugee crises around the world, he said, there are many borders to dismantle, but the most important ones are the ones within our own hearts and minds. These are the borders that are dividing humanity from itself. And that was kind of what my experience was, watching as and also participating as these Germans welcomed refugees. And I won't say that everybody in the town was excited about this, but there were people who really came out and stepped up and really did everything they could to make sure that these people felt like they could make a home here, they could make it work here.
Did you did you play any role from that point on in your community with the refugees?
I actually live next to an eco-village, and so I'm somewhat involved with and connected to the people in that eco-village. One of my neighbors actually set up a bi-monthly meeting at the local church for people in the town to have an opportunity to get to know the refugees. And so it was called Cafe Oasis. And I participated in that. So we would have, there was usually a project that they would do, like some kind of a sewing project or something, so that there was something for people to do with their hands. And people came with their kids and their grandparents, these refugees, because many were from, they were displaced from different areas. There were Kurds, and there were Syrian people, there were people from Syria who were Druze, there were people from Syria who were Muslim, there were people from Syria who were also Christian. And these people would have never made, well, I heard that in Syria before the war, that they had no problem integrating with each other and these different religions. So Syria was actually a pretty integrated place in its own way. But I wondered what it would be like for these people to be living kind of together. And in some cases, because there wasn't enough housing, there were families that had to live together. And I remember being invited over to one family's home, and the woman wanted to teach me how to make some Syrian food. And they were living, two families, a Christian family and a Muslim family, both displaced from a Kurdish region of Syria. And they didn't really have much to do with each other, but they were sharing the space and they were very respectful. And that was really amazing to see. So I was just so impressed with the people that really went out of their way to make people at home. We got to know a very wonderful Palestinian family who were from Syria. Even if you're born in Syria, if your family is Palestinian, you're marked as a Palestinian person, and actually you don't have the same rights as a normal Syrian in Syria. So they didn't have access to their own papers and documents. So if they wanted to leave, they had to ask permission to leave Syria. But the family were very highly educated. And the father, it's a very interesting story, actually. The father was a math teacher or math professor, and he was working for the Syrian government in Damascus, making sure that the level of education of the teachers in the schools was good enough for math teaching. And he had six kids. The older ones were already in college and were studying engineering. And his wife, unfortunately, had just around the time the war started, had a stroke. And eventually they decided to send her to Italy because it wasn't safe for her to stay. So she and another daughter of theirs, who was mentally retarded, and one of the younger sons went to Italy. And so the younger son, who was, I think at this time that we met the family, he was about 15 or 16 years old, was living in Italy, learned a language, actually went to high school there. And the mother was being taken care of by nuns in Italy. And then the rest of the younger kids and the father decided to leave Syria because it was getting to be too dangerous. They had too many checkpoints, and he was afraid if something happened to him that his younger kids wouldn't manage. So he and his 18-year-old son at the time, and then his 12-year-old daughter and a baby. They had a baby that was like two. They ended up on one of these awful treks. You know, they had to leave Syria without the Syrians knowing, because they weren't allowed to leave without permission. And they had to risk everything and walk to Turkey and then take one of these terrible boats across. Mm-hmm. To, and they were in Greece for 6 months waiting to be able to move again. So they went on this terrible, terrible journey. It was a very difficult time, especially with a baby. It was very dangerous. The smugglers were really scary people. But they found their way here, and we helped them to get housing. My husband and I had a house that we were able to give them to use. And we got to know the family really well. And there was another woman in the town who really helped them with the administrative stuff, because Germany is a really bureaucratic country. There's a lot of paperwork. Sometimes it takes a really long time to get through. So you really need that kind of help. But this is what the German people did. They really stepped up and they really helped their neighbors to manage to get through these things month after month, year after year. It's now year eight.
So what are the people at year eight? What kind of issues are they still facing as refugees?
The people that we know and we helped are doing very well. Their kids are on their way to college. They're actually doing very well. They managed. They found the support that they needed. They actually, the Palestinian family moved to a larger area to be closer to other people from their own country. And so I don't get to see them as often as I used to, but they are all doing really well. And I think actually, I just saw an article recently about this subject. So this is actually a blog post from 2020 from the Center for Global Development. And 5 years after the doors were open in September of 2015, to the German state for refugees to come in, 1 million refugees are thriving in Germany. Mm. This is what the article says. I only have contact with, you know, a certain number of people. I'm not really an expert on this, but I can just say that I think it has really worked very well. The hardest part, I think, has been that because, as I said, Germany is very bureaucratic and has a lot of paperwork and a lot of very stringent rules for, of course, standards for education and such, it's actually been very, very difficult for lots of people. Because learning language is one thing. And then, of course, finding your way in the educational system. If you're a kid, for example, they're more likely to put you in a grade that might be lower or a school that might not really meet you at the challenge level because they don't want you to fail. My husband actually is mentoring a young Syrian girl right now who's about 15 or 16. And he said she's incredibly bright, but she's kind of in the wrong track at the moment. He's trying to encourage her to end up taking a more academic path. So I think that's probably been one of the hardest things, also mm-hmm. for professional qualifications. Another person that came in at that time, somebody who I got to know very well, was a 15-year-old migrant from Africa. He adopted me as his mother, ended up being sent to our town with a few other boys at his age, 15, when he came in. And a friend of mine and I, we sort of guided him through, because of course, when you come in as a minor, the Germans plan to put you in a sort of a home for minors so that they can, you know, take care of things. We kind of had to, as a community, as a group of people here living next to this eco-village, we decided we wanted to support him and help him get on to some educational goals. And so we actually worked with the state, the local authorities, to make it possible for him not to have to go to a group home, but we kind of took over sort of looking after things. He's now 23. He only had 4 years of primary education in Africa. Didn't even plan to come to Europe. He ended up here following a friend. And he's now he just passed his test last year to be a plumber and a heating technician in Germany. Right. So after, you know, having only 4 years of primary school education, he was able to learn the language in Germany, which is very difficult. He was able to get a driver's license and start working after vocational school. So yeah, everything has worked out very well for him.
Does your community where you live, are you still accepting refugees?
The town that I live in, I don't know. I think I haven't seen any new faces, and I don't actually know what's going on in that sense, because the Cafe Oasis has disbanded soon after, within a year or so after the refugees arrived. But I think that it's slowed down a lot. I think that once this giant influx came in, and people absorbed this influx of refugees, I think it's still happening. Definitely, people are coming in. Maybe they're going to larger cities. The German system has people going. They kind of know exactly how much space there is everywhere, and they kind of send people to places. I know families, for example, who, you know, a family member came in but wasn't allowed to move to the region where the family was located because there's too many refugees. So they're very good at sort of organizing it, although I have to say, I think that was unfortunate that they had to be separated. So they had to, you know, one was living in the southern part of Germany, and one is living in the north. So yeah, there's definitely things that are still happening there. And I'd say, I think it's a really exciting thing to see that a Western country like Germany could take in this number of people and have it really kind of work out pretty well. I haven't heard any terrible stories, you know.
If you just joined us, you're listening to a conversation with Elisa Graf. She's an American writer, translator, and podcaster living in Germany since 2010. And today we are talking about the refugee situation in Germany and other places around the world. And you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM in Asheville, North Carolina. And we'll return with our guest in just a few minutes after this break. Thank you. Okay, welcome back. That's Chris Rea singing Immigration Blues. That's from his album Blue Guitars. And today we are talking to Elisa Graf on A Better World. She's an American writer, translator, and podcaster living in Germany. And each week on A Better World, we take an in-depth look at the people and organizations locally, nationally, and internationally who are working to create a world that works for everyone. Before the break, Elisa, we were talking about, you were sharing particular situations of people who had gone to Germany after 2015, when Germany kind of opened itself to refugees. Oftentimes, there is a great resistance from citizens in a country to refugees coming into their cities and towns. And I, when I was preparing for the interview, I read a quote from the former governor of Arkansas, Asa Hutchinson, and he was talking about Syrian refugees. And he said, as governor, my chief responsibility is to keep our state and people safe, which is why I have decided to oppose Arkansas being used as a relocation center for Syrian refugees. Why do you think there's resistance to refugees coming into various countries of the world? Is it economic reasons, i.e. citizens are afraid of losing their jobs to the refugees? Is it due to cultural or racial prejudice, is fear of violence? Can you talk to that issue?
My own personal opinion is that it's probably a lot of those things, all rolled into one. But mostly, I think we can all say that people are afraid of the unknown. And if they don't know something about a culture or people, they don't know their neighbor, they're more likely to fear them. Again, it's like if you've lived through something, if you look at the people who've lived through the Holocaust, for example, you hear that, you know, the people that are writing about those experiences or speaking out about those experiences that they had, even though many of them are octogenarians now, they have a humility about them. They have a kind of compassion about them because they've experienced something and they understand how important it is that we have compassion for each other and we recognize our humanity in each other. So I think it's a sad thing that politicians are actually using this subject, this topic, which is such a sad subject. So many people don't want to have to leave their homes. They don't really want to be forced to flee under these circumstances ever. And I just think it's so unfortunate that people can't open their hearts to, more people can't open their hearts to it. Germany is a very special problem in the sense because And actually, it's again due to what cultural differences and economic differences. There's been over the years a very large influx of North African migrants, most of whom are generally underage when they come into the country. And it's got a very open policy towards minors. So unfortunately, just before, actually, there's a great article in the Spiegel International, and I can give you the link if you want to look at that. It's basically talking about this problem because there's a very large number of young men from Morocco, Tunisia, and Algeria. It says no other group of foreigners has fallen into disrepute in Germany in recent years as much as young men from Morocco, Tunisia, and Algeria. In 2016, only 2.4% of asylum seekers came from these North African countries, yet 11% of immigrants suspected of committing a crime are from this region. In Cologne, random samples showed that in 2015, more than 40% of migrants from the Maghreb committed robbery or theft within the first year of their arrival. And I think it's a sad problem that has to do with the countries these young people are coming from. They don't have a lot of hope. They don't have their economies are not very good. This is another reason why we should care about our neighbors, including our neighboring countries, and what's going on in those countries, and how we might have an effect to consider helping to make these countries stronger. Because in the end, borders are shrinking all over the world, and we are one planet, and whatever affects our neighbor is going to affect us eventually. So what I'm leading to is that in 2015, and on New Year's Eve, there was a terrible series of crimes that took place sort of en masse among these groups of people. It was basically, they called it New Year's Eve assaults on women. In Cologne, it happened mostly in Cologne, but it was other cities as well. These crime rings of young gang members and such assaulted women around the train station, stole their phones and their purses and valuables, and there was rape, and there was a lot of things that happened. And it was very traumatizing for the general public of Germany. And it altered their view of refugees. And that was the saddest thing. It's crazy because in 2015, also in September of that year, that was when Merkel decided to open the door. So people were already kind of frightened and worried because of this. And it's hard for people to tell the difference, because if you're coming from Syria, you're also coming from an Arabic culture. And it's very different in terms of how they view women. Germany is a very liberal place for women to feel safe, and there's a lot of equality between the sexes. So it's like, that's like what I've heard the most among Germans, is that's their biggest fear, is that they don't feel safe on the streets anymore. And it's very hard for people to make the distinction between a refugee fleeing a war-torn country and a minor who came in, or a criminal that came from one of these other North African countries. So that's kind of where it all slid together.
So that's still a problem? I mean, was any of that taken care of by the authorities? What happened?
This is just an ongoing issue. It's an ongoing problem. It's not something there were, basically, say in 2016, in this article in Cologne and Dusseldorf, law enforcement has been struggling with criminals from Morocco, Algeria, and Tunisia, having investigated 400 suspects in 2016 alone. So it's a very big problem. And there are gang issues all over the world. So this isn't the only place, obviously, this is a problem. But
well, I can see how that would influence people's conceptions about refugees in a negative way. But that situation notwithstanding, I mean, refugees can be good for a community, can't they? I mean, how can you talk about that? How they can, what are the benefits for a community in having refugees?
I think personally that my own experience in Germany has been that it brings a kind of a colorful diversity that's really important. And I think, I mean, I know members of this community now who came in as refugees and who are really valued members of the community, who are really participating, working in the community. This young man I told you about, who was Palestinian, came in with his father and his two younger siblings. He actually worked in a, he worked as a, let's see, what's the word I want? He was an intern for an architectural office was actually doing, he was learning CAD design and drawing design so that he could go on to study architecture at university. And, you know, I love this because there's a farm nearby here that actually produces organic vegetables, and they wanted to build a large storage facility on their property. And he was the guy who did the drawings for it. And every time I drive past it, I think, yeah, this is such an amazing story. This young man comes over from Syria under these terrible circumstances, and he is given an opportunity in the community to work for a business in the opportunity in the community. And his legacy, you know, just something that he designed even before he went to college is actually, I drive past it all the time and I think about him. But there are lots of people working in this community now who've shown that they were committed to learning the language. Their kids are in schools here. Their kids have friends in the community. It's really changed the landscape in so many ways. And I can only speak for my town, but I really think this is true all across because all the reports are showing that it's been a success letting these people in. It's not the only time Germany opened its doors to migrants or to migration, because back in the 60s, the industries here couldn't continue without bringing in people from Italy and Turkey. So there's also already a large expat, but multi-generational, I mean, for generations now, Turkish population in Germany. And there was a time recently, actually, but since I've been here, where Merkel actually said, the chancellor said, we failed at integration, because you can see that people from Turkish families and communities, they stay to themselves to some extent. So we actually don't have an integrated society. But I think that's changing. I think with this refugee influx, it's also changing.
You've been talking a bit about the concerns, especially in Germany, that people have of refugees coming in. Can you share what your thoughts are about some of the concerns, some of the fears that a refugee has who is coming into a new community, into a new country?
The people that I met under these circumstances were really completely overwhelmed, you know, because it is such a different culture. You know, they're still suffering quite a lot of trauma from having had to leave under the circumstances of war or mostly, I mean, these are Syrian refugees mostly. They have no sense for what their future holds. And they're coming to a place where they have to learn a very difficult language. They have to put their faith and trust in people they don't know. And then also at the same time, they've got all the paperwork and all the challenges of just trying to, you know, get housing and to get food and to find some kind of work to do. And it's really overwhelming, really, really overwhelming. I don't think, when I think about what they've had to deal with, what people have had to deal with, and I think about all around the world, what people are dealing with, raising families in refugee camps, you know, outside of Germany. Mm-hmm. I mean, most people in Germany are not living in refugee camps anymore. They come in and it takes about 3 months for them to be assimilated into some other place. But there are refugee camps where people live their whole lives, you know, with millions of people in Lebanon and Jordan. Mm-hmm. And just to imagine living under those conditions where you don't have a real house, you're living often under very difficult climate conditions as well. So I think this is where my heart really goes out. And I really feel like it really, this problem belongs to all of us. We can't just say it's over there. As I said, the world is not a very secure place for lots of reasons. And it's important that we realize that it could happen to any of us. Even if it doesn't seem that way, just look at Ukraine. And I think it really behooves us to really put ourselves in their shoes and think about what they have to deal with and what they have to go through. And my experience has been that the people I've met, the refugees I've met, are really wonderful people. They're very responsible, very disciplined, and they're really trying very hard to find the best way to assimilate. So yeah, I think they deserve a chance.
If you just joined us, you're listening to A Better World at 103.7 FM in Asheville, North Carolina. Today we are talking to Elisa Graf, American writer, translator, and podcaster living in Germany, and we are talking about the refugee situation in Germany and elsewhere around the world. Okay, that song is Santana playing Migra from their album Supernatural. And that song was in protest to what was formerly the Immigration and Naturalization Service and their raids of undocumented immigrants in the United States. Elisa, so often we see the images on television of the tragic situations of refugees. In February this year, Italy, in fact, reported that a boat carrying migrants from Turkey broke apart. 64 people were drowned, including women and children. And, you know, for a while, the world seems to show concern, but when the images aren't there any longer for us to see on television, we tend to slip back into a sort of complacency about the refugee plight. Do you think there's a way to address this complacency without turning people off to the whole subject of refugees?
That's a really good question. I don't know if I have an answer for it, but I could say, again, you know, I think it really has to do with our own understanding that this subject has been so politicized. And what really concerns me is that I see that in Europe, it doesn't feel to me as though the EU is really doing a whole lot to change the circumstances. We have problems, of course. Now we have a right-wing leader of Italy, and of course they have a really serious problem off the coast of Italy, Lampedusa, and other places where the refugees have ended up. It's a serious humanitarian crisis. And, you know, if you look at Greece in the last, literally just in the last few months, over the last few years, they had been prosecuting humanitarians who were trying to rescue migrants or refugees who were drowning. So there are organizations that go out in their own boats to try and help these people. And then the governments, like of Greece, it's an EU country, literally is prosecuting these people as criminals for saving the lives of these people. So these problems are not going away. They're really quite big problems. I mean, every day we're faced with this issue in Europe. And I think it's very sad what's happening with the situation in England as well, turning away people, this sort of zero tolerance policy. These are human beings. I know it's a complicated issue. And I think we definitely have to acknowledge that people are frightened of the economic impact or feeling as though we can't take care of these people. But again, I think we have to look at why they're coming. It's not, most cases, it's not because they're opportunists and they wanted to leave. It's because they felt they had no choice. And I think that that's where we need to start. We need to recognize that the problems of the world are all of our problems. And we have to try to figure out how we can participate in helping engage in the conversation so that policies are not so draconian. And we can, I think Germany gives a great example of what's possible. Other EU countries haven't stepped up to the plate in this sense.
I mean, in a sense, we are dealing with the effects of underlying problems in the world. I mean, do you think there's hope for humanity that we may someday see ourselves as one human family and start to show more concern and take more action to end those situations that actually lead to people having to become refugees?
Exactly right. And I think, again, if you look at what's happening right now in places like France, where the people are finally standing up and saying, okay, whatever you want to call it, the elites or the people that don't understand us are ruling, you know, the people that are in positions of power, even in democratic countries, that there's a feeling of a disconnect between the people who are making the decisions and the people who are actually having to live with those decisions. And I think that this is one of the reasons why it's never really a priority to in these governments to deal with these kinds of humanitarian crises. And I think that that's a real problem, but it's related. It's all related. These subjects are all related. So I think that the more that we wake up to the fact that it's not really true that we don't have the resources to deal with this. You know, we've also, our governments are, you know, the history of colonization, so many things have led to the circumstances we see ourselves in today in terms of the economic problems of countries. There's large migration leaving, whatever is going on, it affects all of us. And we can't just turn a blind eye to it. So our governments have to start to work to figure out a solution, because I think it is sad. And it's absolutely true that we've turned a blind eye. We've gotten used to it. We've gotten used to it because we don't know what to do about it, right?
Do you ever have a sense of helplessness about what can be done to help? And if so, how do you deal with it?
Well, again, it's, I think, the best thing you can do in these circumstances, besides, of course, trying to voice it to your government officials and let them know that you care about the subject, which is obviously important too. But everybody can do something in their own environment. So even if it's just opening your eyes to the subject and trying to learn more about it, there are lots of places people can help. And there's obviously always a need for money to be sent to organizations like the UN and also International Rescue Committee. So those are the things that I always tell people that they should, you know, look to. But in your own environment, there are places where you can also lend a hand. You can also help with, every community has immigrants. Every community has refugees around the world. There are people that are struggling. And even if you don't know these people, if you just open your eyes to them and you're willing to accept that we're all one, we're all human family. Mm-hmm. You know, one human family, and that we should be giving each other compassion and recognize that nobody leaves their home in this way without having to. You know, people are not. There's this beautiful poem that I would like to just read a little bit from a woman, a Somalian woman named Warsan Shire, who wrote this beautiful poem. I'll just read a section of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
No one leaves home unless home chases you. Fire under feet. Hot blood in your belly. It's not something you ever thought of doing until the blade burnt threats into your neck. And then even you carried the anthem under your breath, only tearing up your passport in an airport toilet, sobbing as each mouthful of paper made it clear you won't be going back. You have to understand that no one puts their children in a boat unless the water is safer than the land. No one burns their palms under trains, beneath carriages. No one spends days and nights in the stomach of a truck, feeding on newspaper unless the miles traveled means something more than the journey. No one crawls under fences. No one wants to be beaten, pitied. No one chooses refugee camps or strip searches where your body is left, or prison. Because prison is safer than a city of fire. And one prison guard in the night is better than a truckload of men who look like your father. No one could take it. No one could stomach it. No one's skin would be tough enough.
And say again who that was written by.
It's written by a Somali poet named Warsan Shire.
Powerful.
It's very powerful. And that's just a section of it. So I recommend you look it up. It's really beautiful.
Thank you for sharing that. We're coming to the end of the show, but I wanted to ask you, are there any good resources that you could tell us about where people who are interested can learn more about refugee situation?
Well, as I said already, I think the best possible thing to look at for if you want to know more about refugees is to look at the UN's refugee website. There's a lot of detail on there, and it tells you also how you can help. And there's also the International Rescue Committee, which is rescue.org, and they tell you everything you need to know about the situation around the world. I think it's a huge subject, obviously, and there isn't a corner of the world right now that isn't affected by this subject. So we should all learn as much as we can, because we also need to open our voices up to trying to make change in government policy. When I think about what happened to the migrants coming into the U.S., for example, just a few years ago, separated from their kids at the border for no reason other than the fact that they were even applying officially. There's nothing illegal about applying for immigration or for work in the U.S. And I just think about the way we treat people in the world. We really need to step up and recognize that we have to do better.
You know, no matter how insulated we may think we are, sooner or later, the refugee situation is going to touch all of us in one way or another.
That's right.
So it behooves us, I think, like you say, to educate ourselves about it. What is it about the refugee situation that drew your interest?
I think that just in general, I've often really felt, I remember there being a woman, a girl my age, I was about probably 9 or 10, on the bus, the school bus, who was from Vietnam. She was a refugee. it broke my heart to see how she was being bullied by the other kids. She was a little older than me than I was at the time. I was in fourth grade, I think. And I decided to befriend her and get off at her stop because I just felt so sorry for her. And I just have a hard time understanding how it is that people are afraid of difference. I've always embraced the diversity of different cultures and, you know, different foods from different cultures and people from different countries. My first grade teacher had come from Nepal, and I thought that was really interesting. So I've always had sort of an interest in diversity. And so for me, yeah, I really have no problem putting myself in someone else's shoes. And I think it's an appalling situation that we have around the world today, with so many people forced to flee their homes, living under awful conditions for long periods of time. And I just can't even understand how it is that we haven't solved this, because it seems to me so unnecessary. But anyway, so that's really the reason why I'm very interested in this subject.
We've come to the end of our show, unfortunately, and I want to thank Lisa Graf for joining us today from Germany and talking about her experience with refugees in Germany and sharing her knowledge about the situation. So, Lisa, thank you for being with us, and all the best to you.
My pleasure. Thank you so much. Take care.
You've been listening to A Better World at 103.7 WPVM, brought to you every week at WPVM. This is McNair Ezard. Thank you for joining us, and hopefully we'll see you next time on A Better World. We're going out today with Bruce Springsteen singing Matamoros Banks. You ever always gone in the things of the earth, they make the claim that the things of heaven may do the same. By my darling, for your love I give God thanks. Meet me on the Matamoros. Meet me on the Matamoros. Meet me on the Matamoros banks. Over river stone and ancient ocean bay, I walk on twine.